If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Now, the outrage that took place a little over a week ago in a British Columbia Human Rights Tribunal hearing continues to grow, and that's the outrage over a transgender, that is, a man still with a penis who believes he's a woman by the name of Yaniv, Jonathan Yaniv, who now wants to go by the name Jessica. He has launched a complaint against a number of aestheticians. These are women who help with beauty. And in this case, he approached, I believe, about 20 of them in Vancouver, asking if they would do a Brazilian body wax, which means removing hair from his penis and his testicles and the genital region. First of all, gave his name as a woman, but then said that he still had a penis. Well, three of them agreed, and apparently never actually went to them. See, all this, I believe, is a big shakedown. One ended up settling with him out of court, and 16 more are now in various stages before British Columbia Human Rights Tribunal. Well, there's been a lot of commentary, and I think... a number of people are getting it about what a crazy, bullying, messed up system this is. And this is a commentary from the United States, from news there.
A transgender person in Canada forced an immigrant woman to close down her business after the immigrant woman declined to wax the testicles of the transgender person, and he sued her for it. Yeah, you heard that correctly. A transgender woman, that is, a person born a man who identifies now as a woman, is trying to use the law to force a woman in Canada to touch his testicles even though she doesn't want to. She couldn't afford to fight the lawsuit, so she had to shut down her business. Here are the facts of this story. This transgender person, whose name is Jessica Yaniv, was born a biological man and now identifies as a woman. But this person still has male genitalia, and he is attracted to women. He calls himself a, quote, proud lesbian. Now, waxing male genitalia and waxing female genitalia are two very different things that require different skill sets. Most waxing boutiques do Brazilian waxing for women only. You can Google the waxing places in your area and you can see this for yourself. These 15 Canadian estheticians Yanov is suing do Brazilian and bikini waxes for women only. But the radical left has told us that transgender women aren't transgender women, they are real women, even if they were born male and have male genitalia, like Jessica Yanov. And so Yanov is claiming these estheticians are violating his human rights by refusing to wax his testicles, even though there's another waxing boutique nearby that specializes in male waxing. He doesn't want to go to that one. No. This transgender person wants to legally compel women to touch his testicles even though they don't want to. Feminists, hello. Talk about the Handmaid's Tale. These leftists want the government to declare it is a human right for a man to force a woman to do something to his genitals that she doesn't want to do. But feminists are silent. People, this is the transgender ideology that we have warned about. It's not about tolerance. It's not about compassion for people suffering from gender dysphoria. It's not about including transgender people in society. It's not about stopping bullying, all of which are fine things. The transgender movement is a political force that will mandate that you violate your religious beliefs, violate your personal views, violate your workplace, your skill set, and dictate that you reject basic biology under penalty of the law, or else you'll be sued and forced to shut down your business and socially ostracized. Don't say we didn't warn you. And that's my final point.
That's, I think, very, very powerful. and from Fox News. And makes an extremely important point. here's Tucker Carlson's take on it. And, you know, Canadians, I don't think sometimes understand just what a joke this country has become. In fact, what a sad joke and what a warning it is to other countries. The loss of freedom in Canada at the hands of the politically correct wrecking crew. And this is Tucker Carlson's take on it. And as my friend Linda passed this on to me, said Tucker Carlson.
Well, here's
Carlson
a weird story out of Canada, which used to be a kind of staid, boring country. Immigrant business owners are being harassed out of business. Businesses shut down, they're being dragged before kangaroo courts, having their lives destroyed. Why is this happening? If you guessed racism, no, it's radical gender activists. Jessica Yaniv is a biological man who identifies as a transgender woman. And so to make a political point, Yaniv has been traveling across British Columbia, visiting beauty salons that provide Brazilian bikini waxing for women. The only problem is Yaniv has male genitalia, so some of the women who work at the salons have refused to wax him. Some had religious objections to it, others were just too uncomfortable. But in Canada, it doesn't matter. To punish them, Yaniv is taking those salons before the British Columbia Human Rights Tribunal and claiming there's a human right to make another person touch your private parts. And so far, the Canadian government agrees. Yaniv is winning. One woman had to close her business following the complaint. Another, a single mother, paid Yaniv $2,500 simply to go away. One journalist who was covering it was banned from Twitter simply for observing the truth that Yaniv is, in fact, a biological male, which is true. Why is all of this happening? Well, it's hard not to conclude the obvious, because Canada is a sick society. Only a society that hates itself would allow itself to be bullied by someone like Jessica Yaniv. Hopefully America will never reach that point, but many people are doing their best to make certain that we do. We should resist that if we can.
And
Congressman Ilhan Omar continues to be a
walking... And that was Tucker Carlson, and I think a very apt warning for the United States, and a very grim reminder to Canada and Canadians of just how we have tumbled in protecting free speech. Well, our Prime Minister, the trust fund kid, Justin Trudeau, has had a strange fascination with China, as did his father before him. In fact, his father, the late socialist Pierre Elliott Trudeau, traveled to Red China in 1959 when very, very few Westerners traveled there, and along with a sidekick, Jacques Hébert, who would go on to become a Canadian senator. And when they came back, they wrote a book that was quite idolatrous of the tyranny of Mao Zedong. And the book was entitled Two Innocents in China, or Deux Innocents en Chine. Well, his son, Justin, has carried on this strange fascination. And Brian Lilly of the Toronto Sun writes, ever since Justin Trudeau told a ladies' night fundraiser in 2013 that he admires China's basic dictatorship, apparently he said, well, you can get things done. Well, yeah, perhaps it can, without any due process. The liberal leader has been teased and mocked for his comments. The mocking isn't funny anymore, as Canadian lives are on the line in China, and Trudeau's government is starting to imitate the regime in Peking by trying to silence critics. Two former senior diplomats have come forward to say officials called to ask them to stop contradicting the government in public on China and to go and to get with the program. Now, these are two former ambassadors, they're no longer civil servants, David Mulrooney and Guy Saint-Jacques. That would be fine if either David Mulrooney or Guy Saint-Jacques were still employed by the government, but they aren't. They're former diplomats now living out their lives as private citizens and offering their expertise on China to the media when asked. The two have commented on the detention of Michael Spavor and Michael Kovrig, detained by China on trumped-up charges of, I believe, espionage. They've been in jail under very harsh conditions for many months. They've also commented on the deteriorating relations caused by the arrest of Huawei executive Meng Wanzhou last December in Vancouver. The incident that led to the arrests of Spavor and Kovrig, you see, the Red Chinese government is trying to blackmail Canada into letting Meng Wanzhou, who is the vice president of Huawei, this shadowy high-tech conglomerate, which is widely believed to provide backdoors into its technology to allow the Red Chinese government intelligence agencies to spy on users. The United States is very leery of letting any sensitive projects go anywhere near Huawei. Anyway, Meng Wanzhou has been, her extradition has been requested by the United States to face various charges, and the Red Chinese are fighting back furiously. They would like her released. Canada says that she has to go through the process. Anyway, there's no doubt the former bureaucrats know what they're talking about. Mulrooney served as Canada's ambassador to China from 2009 to 2012, while Saint-Jacques served from 2012 to 2016. In reports by the Globe and Mail, both men described the calls as odd and out of place. Quote, especially having served in China and knowing how they try to control messaging there, Saint-Jacques said. Both men were called by Paul Foppel, an assistant deputy minister at Global Affairs Canada, or our foreign affairs ministry. The pair, former diplomats, told the Globe that Foppel told them straight up that the push for one voice on China was coming from the Prime Minister's office. He wanted me to know the PMO just wanted him to relay the hope that we could all speak with one voice to support the government. Well, yeah, but what are they doing? That's a big question. Quote, further quote, from Mulroney, people in Ottawa don't invoke the PMO at the Prime Minister's office lightly. It's done to intimidate and to obtain compliance. This is typical of a country sliding slowly to a cultural Marxist, politically correct dictatorship. Well, one headline in the Toronto Sun suggests that the inmates are running the asylum. And this has to do with the difficult matter of what happens to people that are declared by the courts to be not guilty by reason of insanity. Now, of course, we have to kind of tone down any words that might even vaguely be seen as a judgment. So it's the current jargon is not criminally responsible. But anyway, so what happens is if a person is found not criminally responsible because they're insane or were insane at the time, they're not punished, but they are detained or incarcerated in a mental institution and treated until such time as the shrinks believe they can be safely released back into society. Well, that puts an awful lot of faith in the administrations of psychiatry. The understanding, though, is that the dangerous ones, the murderers or the armed robbers or the assault artists or the rapists, will be effectively detained. The public will be protected. Well, there have been a number of incidents lately that strongly suggest that's not the case. Brian Lilly writes, inmates running the asylum. And in Toronto, the institution at the center of the controversy is called the the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAHM, the Center for Addiction and Mental Health. Is the Center for Addiction and Mental Health really the best place to house violent people found not criminally responsible for their crimes? It's a question that has to be asked in light of recent events. I'm not just talking about the escape of Zihin Kong, the meat cleaver killer who we think has fled to China, but also Ahmed Swalim. He looks like probably an African of some sort. A 27-year-old man who escaped Monday. Thankfully, Swalim was found by police later that day, but we have to ask why he was able to get out in the first place. Swalim was convicted for a string of armed robberies in 2012. After being sentenced to 5.5 years in prison, his status was later determined to be not criminally responsible, and he was ordered detained at the Center for Addiction and Mental Health as forensic unit. He is not in jail as such, but because he was found not guilty by reason of mental, not criminally responsible, but not basically because he was found to be insane, society has to be protected. Well, that is not the case. An Ontario Review Board report found him to be at risk of reoffending, and doctors reported him as someone who had previously failed to return to the Center for Addiction and Mental Health while out on day passes, and someone who did not understand the limits placed on his freedom. So why was he out again on Monday? You see, this is the amazing thing. Their own review board finds several of these people dangerous, still a threat to the public, but they're allowed out on day passes, in some cases, unescorted day passes. In other words, you know, they're released and told, you know, if it isn't too much trouble, perhaps you could come back at five o'clock or so. I mean, you shake your head in disbelief at this. But that's what's happening. Now this Negro was eventually found not guilty by, not criminally responsible for these robberies, and is being determined to be dangerous, but still out. And what about the case of Jeffrey Georges Lefebvre? Now Lefebvre has been described by police as violent and dangerous, and then he wandered off on July 14th. He wasn't reported missing to police until July 16th by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health. Now, you see, the system is nuts. What is this man in custody for? A series of attacks on strangers. That's right, violent attacks on people that he picked out of the crowd. Yet he wandered the streets for 2 days unreported. So those who are supposed to be protecting the public hadn't even reported him as having gone walkabout. Are you sensing a pattern with the Center for Addiction and Mental Health yet? Asks Brian Lilly. Let me add one more. Clayton, that's K-L-E-I-T-O-N, Clayton Da Silva, was out on a day pass last month when he allegedly robbed a convenience store and a bakery. He was being held at the Center for Addiction and Mental Health after being found not criminally responsible for the 2009 stabbings that killed one man and critically injured another. I mean, these are dangerous nutcases wandering the streets. The Center for Addiction and Mental Health president, Catherine Zahn, said she gets that people are asking questions, but says her organization has a legal responsibility to both protect the public and treat patients for their eventual reintegration in society. Quote, I understand how events of the last number of months have caused people in the community to be concerned about our ability to effectively manage that fine balance, Zahn said. And Lily comments, that, ladies and gentlemen, is an understatement. There's no balance anymore. When news first broke that Kong, he's the one who chopped up his roommate with a meat cleaver some years ago, but was then found not guilty by reason of mental defect. When news first broke of Kong's disappearance, reporters were told that there wasn't much to say because of privacy concerns. That's, of course, the big bureaucratic cop-out that's supposed to shut you up. Or actually, what it does is cover up the misdeeds of government. And they don't want you to have information. Can't tell more right to privacy. Well, anyway, Lily, I think, it responds quite well to that. When news first broke of Kong's disappearance, reporters were told there wasn't much to say because of privacy concerns. I get keeping medical records private, but when someone that is getting a supposed custodial treatment because they chopped off another human being with a meat cleaver goes missing, privacy takes a backseat to public safety. I completely agree with that. There are times when you are almost forced to conclude that the political system is virtually insane, or at least some judges are. here is a story that, you know, when I heard it on the radio, I immediately ran off to buy a newspaper. And when I read the article and got all the details, I still found my head swimming. How can this be? Anyway, here's the story. Of course, a Jewish judge. Judge strikes down mandatory conviction. A judge has raised colonialism, racism, and the inquiry into missing and murdered Indian women as reasons for striking down part of Canada's impaired driving laws as unconstitutional, arguing it's unjust to give a criminal record to a 22-year-old Indigenous, that she's an Indian, woman, caught with a blood alcohol content 3 times the legal limit. Justice Paul Burstein's decision, released July 16th, runs in stark contrast to how governments of all stripes have addressed impaired driving, which has been to steadily ratchet up the penalties and restrict the possible defenses. Burstein concluded that the requirement for a criminal conviction, therefore criminal record, I've just temporarily lost this. Including $1,000 mandatory fine for the first impaired driving offense violates the charges for protection against cruel and unusual punishment. So the way the law stands now, if you are for your first conviction of impaired driving, there's a mandatory $1,000 fine. And he says that violates, that's essentially cruel and unusual punishment. He instead gave the woman a conditional discharge and 2 years of probation, even though Ontario doesn't allow conditional discharge for impaired driving. And the federal government recently passed a bill to entirely eliminate conditional discharges for impaired drivers across the country. So basically, the judge himself is violating the law. The Ontario Attorney General's Ministry has 30 days to decide if it will appeal. The Ontario Court of Justice ruling says that on November 4th, 2017, Morgan Lake, that's a female, had a blood alcohol concentration above 3 times the legal limit. The legal limit in Canada is 0.8. Point oh eight. Anyway, she had 3 times that. I mean, she was seriously blasted. And with 3 times the legal limit for alcohol in her blood, she took her mother's car without permission, so stole a car, in an area north of Oshawa, Ontario. She pulled out of a parking lot, fishtailed, hopped the curb, launched the car airborne by 2 or 3 feet, landed on a sidewalk, narrowly missing a lamppost, and then resumed driving until police chased after her and pulled her over and breathalyzed her. Judge Burstein said the woman's troubled family history and struggles with addiction, outlined in what's called the Gladue Report, combined with her promising future and commitments to seeking treatment, meant he couldn't justify giving her a criminal record. She's turning her life around. Now, a Gladue report, you see, all people are equal in Canada before the law, but some are more equal than others. In fact, there's two judicial systems. There's one for privileged people, in this case, Indians. They are entitled, according to our Supreme Court, to a Gladue hearing, to a special hearing, in sentencing. If they're convicted, they're entitled to a special hearing to determine what being an Indian may have contributed to their crime. And you know, I'll put that very well. What was their experiences as a result of being an Indian that would mitigate their responsibility? And much is made of racism and colonialism and white settlers and so on. But, you know, when you get right down to it, what does any of that have to do with why a person, Native Indian or otherwise, would go out and commit a crime? Well, it doesn't. It shouldn't, but we have an absolute idiot justice system. I'm trying to get the rest of this. And the judge considered an issue in this case is something known as a curative treatments discharge. At the time of Luke's offense, criminal code allowed them for some impaired driving cases if the offender goes into addiction treatment, but only in provinces opting in to that provision. Ontario, which is where this crime occurred, had never opted in. Federal Justice Department, because a discharge means no conviction is entered, a further offense wouldn't trigger the escalating mandatory penalties for repeated impaired driving. In his decision, Burstein called it unjustifiable that provinces could block access to these discharges. Parliament has denied First Nations like the Mississaugas of Scugog Island, I guess she was a Mississauga, a say in whether its people ought to be afforded access to curative treatment discharges for alcohol impaired driving offenses. The offense for which the person was convicted will remain on their criminal record and will be a prior offense if there's a subsequent impaired driving conviction. Luke's lawyer, Sarah Samet, said in a statement that sentencing has always been a very individualized process. The court has imposed a meaningful sentence which addresses both the public's concern to curb drunk driving as well as the important objectives to rehabilitate an indigenous offender. I expect our appellate courts would uphold Justice Burstein's ruling if and when the Crown appeals. This is absolute nothingness. Even if the Indian woman who was convicted is in fact turning her life around and is kept off the booze, has been taking counseling, and is trying to improve her education, but even if that's true, and those are good things, that shouldn't let her off the hook for what she did. And how racism and disappeared Native and Native women, disappeared or murdered Native women, racism or colonialism, has anything to do with why she poured three times the legal limit of alcohol down her gullet is beyond all belief. Colonialism didn't force her to drink until she was pie-eyed. Racism. It wasn't some racist who came along and somehow grabbed her and pried open her mouth and forced her to drink. We have permitted absolute nonsense to rule. And this is the typical cultural Marxist excuse and mental process. I'd like to go over that because this is an old mental dodge, and it goes like this: all people are equal. Okay. Well, you know, when you start with a nonsensical idea, then all sorts of further nonsense will follow from it. Okay, so all people are equal, right? But we notice that for instance, more Native Indians are in prison than their proportion of the population. They're disproportionately in prison, as are blacks. So rather than say, well, maybe all people are not equal, you then look for an excuse rather than question your initial premise. According to this belief, all people are equal, well, therefore the results should be equal. So when you see unequal results, then rather than going back and reassessing whether you were correct in the first place in your premise that all people are equal, what the cultural Marxists do is then find something to blame. Now, in the case of the Native Indians, the cultural Marxists have come up with an impressive list of reasons why Indians are not are disproportionately committing crime: racism, colonialism, and, well, the fact that many Native women have been murdered or disappeared. Now, there's no causal relationship at all. As many of the offenses have to do with alcohol, which often then leads to violence, but not in the case of this particular woman, but it doesn't. Racism has, or colonialism has, nothing to do with it. In the case of this woman, she was just very lucky that nobody was hurt. Nobody forced her to drink. And the dangerous thing about this approach of always finding an excuse for bad behavior on the part of minorities is that it gives them a ready-made escape from responsibility. I'm not really responsible because of racism or because of slavery, not in the case of Indians, but in the case of blacks. So instead of taking individual responsibility for themselves, so the cultural Marxists offer them, basically a get out of jail quick card. This is one of the big disasters gradual ascendancy of cultural Marxism in the Canadian justice system, and something that has to be challenged. We need to retake this country and reimpose common sense of individual responsibility. Now, it's true that judges always have the option within the law of in arriving at a judgment, a sentence, that takes into account the individual circumstances. That's perfectly valid. And the fact that this Indian woman is apparently trying to turn her life around, if all this is true, and is going back for some education and has been taking counseling, those might be mitigating circumstances in terms of a sentence. But they should not be a get out of jail free card, because that then undermines personal responsibility. Why should I be responsible if, in fact, I can always claim it's the system. Well, it, you know, fill in the blanks. It's you know, racism or colonialism or some other ism. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. I'm going to take my musical break tonight, and I'm going to play some songs, as I have had for the past couple of nights, from a CD of the late George Jones. George Jones was a great personality, a great singer, and whose presence was felt within country and Western music for more than four decades. He came from Beaumont, Texas. George, certainly in his earlier days, was known for his very heavy drinking, and I also believe drug use. He was called the Possum, and he was also called No Show Jones for the very good reason that sometimes he was too under the weather to fulfill his musical engagement. So luckily, when he finally got sober, that behavior changed. A real character, a fine man, George Jones, and here's some songs from him, beginning with something about liquor, White Lightning.
Same old places where the memories You keep saying you love him. I believe that it's true, and it just doesn't matter how much I love you. But in time you'll understand, dear, when you shed a tear, then you'll know you were living in your tender years. In your eyes there's a love light that's shining for him, but how long will it stay there? Will that love light grow dim? You can just see the happiness, you can't see the tears. It's true, 'cause you're living in your tender years. So if I can't be your first love, I'll wait and be your last. I'll be somewhere in your future to help you forget the past. And you'll know that I love you, the love that's sincere, 'cause I'll wait till you're through living in your tender years. Yes, you'll know that I love you, the love that's sincere. Yes, I'll wait till you're through living in your tender years. I've been living a new way of life that I love so. But I can see the clouds are gathering, and the storm will wreck our home. For last night you hooked your tongue, and you didn't even show. This is true, for I've been watching you from the window up above. And I wish that I had been. But it's best to get to know you and the way your heart can see it. I thought we'd be all together, and our hearts beat like a glow. But I was wrong, for I've been wanting that. picture that I carry. One we made some time ago. If they ask who's in the picture with me, I say just a girl I used to know. Just a girl I used to go around with. Just a friend from long ago. I don't tell them how lost I am without her. I say she's just a girl I used to know. I say she's just another girl now, just a flame that lost its glow. And I say her name has slipped my mind now, and she's just a girl I used to know. Girl I used to spend some time with, just a friend from long ago. I don't talk about the nights I cry without her. I say she's just a girl I used to know. Yes, we must have it out
That's George Jones and a duet with Melville Montgomery. Of course, some of his most famous duets were with his wife, Tammy Wynette. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me. Back with you again tomorrow. Same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf, forever.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave, our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes, and loved ones dear, firmly stood and noble.